Good morning. Good morning. Can you hear me? Good. Welcome to the United States Institute of Peace. And thank you for sharing your morning and braving the weather and coming here. If I can just ask you for a minute before we begin, just to check your cell phones and see if they are off or in a silent mode. Of course, you haven't gotten coffee or hot tea. We have some out in the lobby. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We have a special panel, two speakers from Pakistan, and of course, and working with an important group here in D.C. With Dr. Douglas Johnston and Azhar Hussain of the International Center for Religion and Diplomacy. Today's panel is called Promoting Peace and Tolerance Through Madrasa Reform. My name is Kamar al-Huda. I work here in the Religion and Peacemaking Program at USIP, and I'd like to make a few introductory remarks. What we'll do is have a few remarks, and then Dr. Johnston will speak about the center's program. Then our speakers from Pakistan will speak about what they've done and what they're doing to institute reform in their respective madrasas. I think it's would be fair to say that the term and use of the word madrasa conjures up a great deal of curiosity, if not some anxiety. Since and before 9/11, we have had many reports and papers where people who have never gone to these madrasas or studied in madrasas have labeled it as some papers have called it Jihad University, Culture of Jihad, the Mass Weapons of Destruction for Education, and so forth. Other scholars have said there's no connection between the madrasa institution to terrorism. This sort of conundrum between the institution of a madrasa in Pakistan or in South Asia and its connection to terrorism or extremist ideology is one we'd like to address today, but through the lens and framework of what is happening on the ground in specific institutions. The madrasa is not new. It's an institution since the 10th century of the Islamic period. And just like many other religious educations, whether it be Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism, or Hinduism, a madrasa, or a place of learning, is for religious learning, religious formation, and spiritual development. Like all these institutions, they practice rote memorization, and some pedagogies have been borrowed from Western societies. In Pakistan, however, madrasas are viewed sometimes as a place for not only for children to learn and go study Islamic sciences, to become tomorrow's religious leaders, and to have develop an ethics, but also to use it as an alternative to secular education. So you see education within the madrasa system as a place to have both the Islamic sciences and an ethical identity. Interesting enough, outside of Pakistan, madrasas have been seen as a point of contact during conflict, either during the war with the Soviet invasion or the 9/11, the point of contact between madrasas and Western society or Western scholars or experts have been at point of conflict and conflict reduction. So what role do they play in Pakistani society? How are they contributing towards promotion of peace and tolerance and peacemaking? And how are they facilitating changes in that particular society? Those are at least some of the questions we'd like to address. I'd like to point out that throughout the last 35 years, madrasa reform has been on the subject for Pakistani government. At least three attempts have been made by three respective governments, but because of tensions between the ulama, the religious classes, between the madrasa educational educational elite, there's still mistrust between the government and any changes or force of changes to their institutions. They run privately, they run independently, and they are not integrated with the national public education. This has started to change with President Pervez Musharraf and a strategy in madrasa reform. There has been, in most recent reform strategy, to have model dini madrasas, at least five madrasas in Pakistan, not the Freudian slip, where they would incorporate not only the religious sciences, but would incorporate computers, English, history, literature, that is English literature. One more is on, yes, and the social sciences, in addition to the rigorous Islamic sciences that they have. One of the most critical problems between the scholars or the ulama of the madrasa institutions and their relationship with the Pakistani government is the trust of having their curriculum change to a point where they're compromising their own particular studies. For instance, a lot of the curriculum go back to the 10th, 11th, 12th century. Some of it has changed throughout the time, obviously, in different periods of time. Just to give you a sense, contrary to reports in Newsweek and other places, that all these students only study and remember the Quran, there is a rigorous curriculum of dialectics, of logic, astronomy, math, principles of law, principles of hadith or sayings of the Prophet, the life of the Prophet in different stages, theology, jurisprudence, and of course exegesis of the Quran. All of these range from particular of their school of thought, the four main Sunni schools or the Shia schools. What I'm suggesting is that the Quran is just one of many texts that is used, and in the within law, there is at least 100 books that is used in the Bareilly curriculum. All of this, at least perceived from madrasa administrators, is that if we were to add or change many of the texts that we would use, something would have to be compromised. One of these texts would have to be compromised, or at least most of the curriculum would have to be changed. So there's this tension that is ongoing. So madrasa reform is most interestingly creates more tension. For many other people who have written on madrasa reform, there's this sort of simplistic idea that if we just add the sciences or Western history, that somehow they'll be more open-minded or liberal. This has caused more suspicion of the relationship between those scholars or experts in the field and madrasa administrators. I lay these particular issues out as a sort of a context of the sort of a confluence and changes of madrasa reform, of the tensions between the state and madrasa, between the perceptions in the West of what a madrasa is or what it should be, and the gradual changes that's happening on the ground. With this short introductory remarks, I'd like to introduce Dr. Douglas Johnston, who is the founder of the International Center for Religion and Diplomacy.
Thank you, Kumar, and thank you all for coming out on this very cold morning, particularly those of you who traveled 4.5 hours from New York. I'm impressed. Let me begin by first paying tribute to the Institute of Peace and the great programs that it has been initiating over time under David Smock's stellar leadership, but also the work that it itself is doing with the madrasas. Kumar is close to it. Christine Fair has done quite a bit, and we try to achieve a degree of synergy, hence our presence here this morning. 3 years ago, I was meeting with the then executive director of the Institute for Policy Studies in Islamabad and briefing him on work we were doing in Kashmir. He was an acquaintance. We had involved him in some of the work we had done in Afghanistan. And he shared with me the fact that they had just completed a major research project on the madrasas. And I expressed significant interest in that to the point where on my way out the door, he said, "Would you like to partner with us in reforming the madrasas?" And I said, "Absolutely." That began my long dance here with learning and understanding what madrasas are all about. The arrangement that we came up with was one where we would raise the money here. Their institute and ours would negotiate the substance, and then, of course, we had our man on the ground actually conducting workshops along with the scholars that they brought to the process. And this all began with a 15-day session in Islamabad. It was called, we titled it Islam and Contemporary Thought. And representatives were invited in from all five sects that sponsored these madrasas. And these were people on oversight boards, senior faculty, and administrators. About, I think it was 29 in number. Many of them, despite the fact that they had a relationship with the Institute of Policy Studies, they came with great suspicion and were sort of determined in advance that they would stay for one day and then leave. As it turned out, they stayed all 15 days. Everyone did. And the reception to this whole effort was very positive, and it sort of opened the door for more to follow. So what we set out to do then was two basic things. One was to reform the curriculums by expanding them to include the arts and sciences, but with a particular emphasis on human rights, particularly women's rights, and religious tolerance. And the second thing, which I think is even more important, was to transform the pedagogy to develop critical thinking skills among the students. Because what you have now, as Komar was pointing out, most of the madrasas, it's rote memorization of the Quran and the study of Islamic principles. Now, this is quite apart from the fact that back in the Middle Ages, madrasas were the absolute peaks of learning excellence in the world. But over time, in fact, it was Western exposure to them that led to the creation of the university system. And so things like funding a chair in a given discipline or the mortar boards and the tassels you wear at graduation, they all came out of the madrasas. Few of us are aware of that. But over time, under the impact of colonialism and certain other factors at play, they regressed to where today the vast majority of them are about rote memorization and the study of Islamic principles, and to some extent in some of these madrasas, Islamist ideology. Well, thus far, we have been having pretty good success with this for two reasons. One is we've been able to do it in such a way that the madrasas feel that this is their reform effort. It's not something imposed from the outside. Why is this important? In the wake of 9/11, the U.S. government gave the government of Pakistan $100 million for educational reform. The madrasas, which are independently funded, most of them locally, but some receive their funding from the Gulf, Saudi Arabia, and what have you, they didn't want anything to do with it because they feared that buying into that process would ipso facto mean the secularization of their curriculums. So they weren't playing in that game. And that's why it was important that when we undertook the effort that we did to give them ownership in that process. And the way that would work is to expose them to good ideas, and they wanted more. I might also say that these madrasa leaders, despite this sort of confined curriculum, a lot of them are very sharp and they have good ideas. So giving them ownership was not a great risky proposition. And it's also the other thing that's important to understand here is that even though the majority of the population of madrasa students are from poor families that really send them there out of a desperate need to to provide shelter and food, which the madrasas do provide, they still, when they graduate, these folks end up having quite a lot of clout because they are sort of occupying the religious positions, and they have quite a constituency of people who listen to them. So it's important for many reasons that they be thoughtful and well-educated as they can be. The second ingredient in our success to date has been the fact that we appeal to their own heritage, pointing out how many of the pioneering breakthroughs in the arts and sciences, even religious tolerance, took place under Islam 1,000 years ago. And when they start listening to that and thinking about it, you hear it enough times, all of a sudden you walk a little taller and think, hey, maybe we can do better. Now, we, for about 2 years, worked in partnership with this IPS, Institute for Policy Studies, and then became aware of the fact that although we were reaching all five sects that sponsor these schools, we really weren't getting the more conservative elements in the harder line sects, if you will. The Deobandis, which are the most powerful in all of Pakistan, about 60% of the total action in terms of influence and numbers of madrasas and all are Deobandis, but then also the Wahhabis. And so actually the State Department, it was our good fortune that the desk officer at the State Department called me up one day and said, I have a Deobandi madrasa leader here and was wondering if you would like to meet with him. And he's from Balochistan. That's the so-called hot zone of Pakistan up near the Iranian and Afghan borders. And I said, absolutely. And it turned out that was Hafiz Khalil Ahmed, who will be our first speaker. And as we met with him and talked with him, it became apparent that he not only controlled a madrasa, but he and his family had great influence over all 650 Deobandi madrasas in Balochistan. And then the exact same thing repeated itself later when Qazi Abdul Kamush, who is a Wahhabi leader, also graced our doorstep. And we ended up effecting partnerships with them, getting to these more conservative elements, if you will. And that's where much of our focus is these days. So far, we've probably reached madrasa leaders that are affiliated with somewhere between 400 and 500 different madrasas, which sounds like a lot, but it's not. It's just the tip of the iceberg when you consider the fact there's somewhere between 10,000 and 14,000 madrasas in Pakistan. Not even the Pakistani government knows how many there are, so we don't either. What we're trying to do is, because the magnitude of the challenge is so great, we've initiated what we call a master trainer program, where we bring together madrasas who've been graduates of earlier workshops, who showed unusual ability and the potential to be able to train madrasa leaders themselves. So we've been training them to be able to conduct one-day seminars in one a quarter, in areas involving madrasas that have not been involved with our efforts to date. So it's just trying to snowball this out. And what I would call all of this is the winning the hearts and minds phase. And once we get a critical mass on that, which won't be very long from now, we're going to have to come up with the kind of resources that are needed, significant resources, to provide textbooks in the new disciplines in Urdu and to provide the teachers in those disciplines as well. We're trying to work that part of the problem as we go along. I'll just share with you an anecdote and then turn it over to those to whom you really came to listen to. But I had the pleasure of being in Pakistan about 3 months ago with two of our board members I took over there. And we went into two madrasas. We had a Deobandi workshop that we were conducting with some of Khalil's folks. But then we went into two different madrasas, one of which had been sort of identified in the popular media. It was Wahhabi madrasa, and identified with the London bombers. Another that a Deobandi madrasa in Karachi that is said to provide most of the fighters for Chechnya and Kashmir, and also that had spawned the two most violent anti-Shiite terrorist groups. Well, when we went in there, and we hadn't been there before, but to address these folks, there was a lot of rage in the room over U.S. foreign policy, particularly in relation to Iraq. But at that very time, Lebanon was at the peak of its crisis in terms of the fighting going on. So the rage was very palpable. And the way we were able to get past that rage was to indicate that, you know, we are not a government organization, nor have we ever received funding from the U.S. government. And while the United States had made some mistakes of late, it was important for them to remember where the U.S. had intervened on the behalf of Muslims in Bosnia, Kosovo, Somalia. Left unsaid in most reports on Somalia are the more than 100,000 Somali lives that were saved as a result of that humanitarian intervention. And I said, while you may justifiably criticize the United States for operating in the Middle East with a double standard because of its strategic relationship with Israel, so too can you accuse Arab leaders of operating with a double standard, who complain mightily of Israeli mistreatment but turn a deaf ear to Palestinian pleas for humanitarian assistance. So I said, no matter where you look, there are double standards, and they're driven by perceived national self-interest. I said, but that's not why we're here today. We're here today to meet with you about the values that we hold in common. And then I recited some passages from the Quran, the thrust of which goes like, you know, oh mankind, God could have made you one had he willed, but he didn't. Instead, he chose to make you separate nations and tribes so that you may know one another, cooperate with one another, and compete with one another in good works. And I said, we're here to open the competition in good works. And then we went into a discussion of these values that I was mentioning. And it was, the rage just dissipated. And by the time it was over, there was really you could feel a sort of a spirit of fellowship. Very well received. After we spoke at the Diobandi workshop that we were doing, one madrasa leader came up to me, and hand over his heart, smile on his face, smile on his eyes. He said, you have made me so very, very happy. He said, we thought all Americans hated us. And I'm thinking in my mind, based on the media portrayal that people have, that's probably not far off the mark. Another madrasa leader came up and shared with us a situation in his village where a young lady had been caught talking on her cell phone very early in the morning to a young man in an adjacent village in whom she had an interest. And that was, she was caught, and that was deemed to violate the honor code, if you will, and the tribal elders had decided that she must die, as must her mother and sister and the boy's mother, and the boy was to lose his nose and his ears. And very draconian stuff. But this madrasa leader said that because of this was his second seminar, his exposure to the human rights discussion had, he felt compelled now to go back and confront this on religious grounds. And it was not without some trepidation. He feared for his own life. But he went back. He pointed out how the Quran does not prohibit a woman from talking to a man. And he also appealed to the passages that suggest peaceful resolution of differences. And he pulled it off. The situation was settled. Nobody was harmed. That's a precedent, set a precedent, at least for that village, and hopefully for others as well. But I guess in closing, in my remarks, I would say, you know, why this is important is not just because it's going to provide a better future for the children of Pakistan, which it is, but I think all of our children have a stake in this, just because this sort of gets right at the perceived heart of the global war on terrorism. But I'd like at this point to call on Hafiz Khalil Ahmed, who is the Diobandi madrasa leader that I mentioned earlier. And then he will be followed by Qazi Abdul Kamush, our Wahhabi leader, who is also president of the Muslim Christian Confederation International. So he tries to do interfaith work as well. But at this point, if you would care to make a few remarks, Khalil, we'll turn it to you. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم أما بعد قل اللهم مالك الملك تؤتي الملك من تشاء وتنزع الملك ممن تشاء وتعز من تشاء وتذل من تشاء بيدك الخير إنك على كل شيء قدير صدق الله العظيم. میرے معزز سامعین اور میرے ساتھیوں السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ. سب سے پہلے میں آپ حضرات کا شکر گزار ہوں کہ مجھے اس کار خیر میں کام کرنے کا موقع ملا جس سے ہم سب یکجا ہو کر انسانیت کے فلاح و بہبود کے لیے کام کر رہے ہیں.
May peace be on you, and I am honored to be here and honored to work towards the peace.
میرا نام ہے حافظ خلیل احمد اور میرا تعلق ہے دیوبندی مسلک سے اور میرا انسٹیٹیوٹ ہے بلوچستان کوئٹہ شہر میں جو 1942 میں قائم ہوا ہے جس سے آج تک 14,500 طلباء فارغ التحصیل ہو چکے ہیں.
My name is Hafiz Khalil Ahmed. I am a vice principal of Jamia Maqdool Uloom in Balochistan, Quetta. About 14,500 graduates came out of this school since 1942.
آپ پھر اس کو ریپیٹ کر لیں, شاید آواز نہیں آئے ہم کو.
ڈو آئی نیڈ ٹو ریپیٹ دس؟ اوکے, یو کین آلسو ٹرن اپ دا مائک. مائی نیم از حافظ خلیل احمد. آئی ایم اے وائس پریزیڈنٹ آف وائس پرنسپل آف اے جامعہ مطلب علوم مدرسہ ان بلوچستان کوئٹہ. There are 14,500 graduated so far since 1942 from our madrasas.
اور میں نے 9/11 کے بعد ایک نئی بورڈ میں نے تشکیل دی پوری پاکستان کے حوالے سے, ان کے نام ہے اتحاد المدارس العربیہ. آلریڈی پاکستان میں 5 بورڈز کام کر رہے تھے لیکن 9/11 کے بعد میں نے محسوس میں نے کی کہ اس نئے بورڈ میں ہم نئے مضامین کے ساتھ, مثال کے طور پہ سائنس اور انگلش میتھ, وہ چیزیں ہم اس میں داخل کر سکے, تو اس حوالے سے اس بورڈ کا تشکیل بھی ہوا ہے الحمدللہ.
دیر آر 5 مدرسہ بورڈز that already exist in Pakistan based on sect. So there is a Shia board, Wahhabi board, Deobandi board, Jamaat-e-Islami and Brelvi board. But we have worked to create another board which will combine, which basically asks madrasas to register on his board, which is anybody can register. There is no sectarian bias there. And the curriculum includes English, math, sciences, and interreligious tolerance.
9/11 کے بعد حالات یکسر بدل گئے ہیں جس کی وجہ سے ہمیں اپنی پالیسی اور اپنی سوچ بھی بدل کرنا پڑا, تو اس حوالے سے جو نیا بورڈ میں نے تشکیل دی اس پہ تمام مذاہب کے ساتھ ہماری گفت و شنید ہو رہی ہے, اور ہمارے جو بورڈ ہے اس میں جتنے بھی مذاہب کے لوگ ہیں وہ کسی حوالے سے یہاں ایگزام بھی دے سکتے ہیں اور اپنے دیوبندی ہو, وہابی ہو, اہل تشریح ہو, جو بھی ہو وہ اس میں ایگزام بھی دے سکتے ہیں. اس کے مقاصد میں یوں بیان کر رہا ہوں.
دس بورڈ, دا نیو بورڈ دیٹ وی ہیو کریٹڈ, آبویسلی آئی آلریڈی سیڈ اٹ, اینی ون کین can become a member of this board, any madrasa, and can take an exam that is consists of the contemporary subjects as well. Right now, madrasa board exams only exam kids, test kids on religious subjects, but the tests are now from this board are designed so they would have to know English and math and sciences as well.
9/11 ke baad tasadum ka daur shuru ho gaya aur galat fehmiya.
Sorry.
It's okay. Sir, may I repeat? Yes, sorry. 9/11 ke baad halat yaksar badal gaye aur tasadum ka daur shuru ho gaya aur galat fehmiya waqtan fawaqtan kam hone ke bajaye zyada hone lage aur madaris sar fehrist rahe is zaman mein.
After 9/11, misperceptions and misunderstandings have grown and madaris have been targeted mainly based on these misperceptions of being radical.
اور میں نے محسوس کیا کہ بجائے نفرتوں اور غلط فہمیوں کے مل جل کر اور باہمی گفت و شنید کے ذریعے مسائل حل نکالنے کو پائے تکمیل تک پہنچایا جائے.
And I felt that we had to, I have to take a stand and do something that creates more tolerance within madrasa environment and also sends a message to the West that not all madrasas are these hate mongers.
اور اس زمن میں ایک چیز میں بتاؤں کہ میرا تعلق یو ایس ایمبیسی سے 1996 سے ہے اور وہ وقتاً فوقتاً ہمارے انسٹیٹیوٹ اور ہمارے ادارے کی طرف وہ آئے اور ہم نے ان کو ویلکم کہا ہے وہاں کوئٹہ میں.
I know US embassy and have relations with them since 1996 and from time to time they have visited our madrasa in Balochistan and we enjoy a good relationship with them.
9/11 ke baad bhi hamare taluqat isi tarah rahe jaise 9/11 se pehle jo hamare taluqat the. اور میرا آنا 2001 میں بھی یہاں واشنگٹن میں آیا تھا لیکن 2001 کے بعد میں نے ضرورت محسوس کی کہ اس کام کو اس پیس کو ہم اور آگے لے جائیں. تو اس زمن میں 2005 میں میرا واشنگٹن آنا ہوا اور میری ملاقات اسٹیٹ ڈپارٹمنٹ میں پاکستانی ڈیسک آفیسر ان سے ہوئی. تو ان کے سامنے میں نے اپنی چیزیں رکھی, میں نے کہا کہ ہم اس طرح کی پیس کے کام کر رہے ہیں تو آپ کو چاہیے کہ آپ ہمارے ساتھ مل کے آپ کام کریں. تو انہوں نے ہمیں ریکمینڈ کی آئی سی آئی ڈی کی طرف جہاں ہماری ملاقات ڈگلس جانسن سے اور اظہر باہی سے ہوئی اور جو ادارہ چلا رہے تھے اسے.
In moving that forward in 2005 I came to United States and talked to State Department and saying that you really have to kind of help me out as far as this peace process. I'd like to meet someone that we can collaborate with. And they asked ICRD and had us meet ICRD, Douglas Johnston and myself to start a program of some sort of a program that promotes tolerance and peace.
لیکن جب ہمارے ICRD والوں سے ملاقات ہوئی میرے تو میں نے دیکھا کہ میری سوچ اور ان کا سوچ یکسر ہے, کیوں نہ ہم مل جل کے ہم اس کام کو آگے بڑھا سکے.
And I found out a consistency is when we met with ICRD and decided to move forward with the mission of creating more tolerance.
کیونکہ ہمارے جو مدارس کے جو ٹیچرز ہیں, بلکہ اس زمانے میں پہلے میں ایک بات بتاؤں کہ جیسے ہمارے قمر الہدا صاحب نے فرمایا اور جوسف صاحب نے بھی فرمایا کہ گورنمنٹ پاکستان یہ کہہ رہی ہے کہ مدارس میں دہشت گردی کی صرف اور صرف تعلیم دی جاتی ہے. میں آپ کے سامنے ایک سیمپل اور ایک ہوں کہ میں ایک دیوبندی مسلک سے میرا تعلق ہے اور اس مدرسے سے آج تک جتنے بھی طلباء فارغ ہوئے ہیں کبھی بھی کسی نے بھی نہیں کہا کہ جہادی گروپ ہے یا جہادی لوگوں کو انہوں نے سپورٹ دی ہے.
As mentioned by Mr. Qamar al-Huda, and also the government tends to, Qamar al-Huda basically said what government says, and that Madaris promotes this jihadi mentality. And in my experience, in my Madaris, none of the students created a jihadi group so far. I have to put a caveat. He's not saying that Qamar al-Huda said that. He's saying he said that about the government. He's just repeating it.
کیونکہ مدارس میں تعلیمی نظام اور ٹیچر اس قابل نہیں کہ وہ عالمی حالات کو اس سلسلے سمجھ سکے حالات کو سمجھ سکے اس قابل نہیں کہ ہمارے ٹیچر کہ وہ نئے حالات کو سمجھ سکے
In Madaris, the teachers are not equipped to, does not have a competency to understand at this point or be aware of the bigger geopolitical environment. They're not exposed to it, so there is a huge gap in their understanding of the world affairs.
اور اس سلسلے میں آئی سی آر ڈی کے تعاون سے ہم نے ٹیچر ٹریننگ ورکشاپ شروع کرا دی ہے.
That's why we have started a teacher training program for Madaris of Balochistan in partnership with ICRD.
جو کہ بلوچستان کی تاریخ میں کسی نے بلکہ پاکستان کی تاریخ میں کسی نے کروائی نہیں اس طرح کے ورکشاپ.
Right, and this is a unique workshop that has not happened in the history of Pakistan so far.
جس میں 10 دن کے ورکشاپ میں 6 دن انہیں جدید سائنسی علوم، طریقے تدریس، بچوں کے نفسیات، جنیات، امریکن کلچر اور تنقیدی سوچ کے بارے میں مختلف شعبوں سے لیکچر دیتے ہیں.
In this workshop we cover from child psychology to modern pedagogical approaches, and also we talk quite extensively about understanding one's own culture, their Pakistani culture, their culture, religious culture, and also understanding Western culture, American culture to be exact.
اور دوسرا جو سیشن ہے جو 4 دنوں پر مشتمل ہے جس میں ہمیں مذہبی رواداری، ہم آہنگی اور دوسرے مذاہب کے لوگوں کے ساتھ کس طرح بات چیت اور ان کے ساتھ مل جل کے رہنے کا طریقہ کو سلیقہ سکھاتے ہیں.
Yeah. Second part of the workshop we emphasize tolerance, prejudice reduction and also مذہبی رواداری, religious tolerance and interfaith dialogue skills, that way they can come closer to understanding where we are trying to go.
اور آخر میں ہمارے شرکا اپنے مدارس میں 1 دن کا ورکشاپ خود کریں گے جس میں مزید 30 مدارس کے لوگ شریک ہوں گے.
Right now we have master trainers created within these madrasa environments, so these teachers will go out and do a 1-day workshop for about 25-30 more teachers each time for madaris.
اور اس وقت ہم نے پاکستان بلوچستان کے سطح پہ 500 مدارس کو ہم نے ٹریننگ دے چکے ہیں ان کے ٹیچرز کو.
اوکے, یا سو فار آئی سی آر ڈی ہیو بین ایبل ٹو, وی ہیو اباؤٹ اے گریجویٹنگ کلاس آف 500 مدارس ٹیچرز سو فار, سو وی ہیو الومنائی آف 500 ٹیچرز فرام مدارس.
اور ان کی سوچ مثبت رہی ہے انشاءاللہ, اور بھی آگے ہماری کوشش یہی ہوگی کہ ہم اور مدارس سے, بلکہ ہم مدارس والے ہم سے رابطہ کر رہے ہیں کہ آپ ہمیں اس طرح کے فیس پروسیس میں ہمیں آپ بھی شامل کر لیں.
Right now we are not able to meet the demands because there's so many مدارس coming online and want a similar workshop. So
اور اس زمن میں ہم نے جو ہمارا سب سے پہلے جو ورکشاپ ہوا 10 ڈیز, اس پہ ہمیں کافی لوگوں کی سوچ اور کافی لوگوں کے ذہنوں کے بارے میں ہمیں آگاہی ہوئی, اور جس طرح وہ یورپ کے بارے میں, خاص کر یونائٹڈ اسٹیٹ کے بارے میں سوچ رہے تھے, اور ہمیں کافی اس میں مشکلات ہونے لگے. لیکن الحمدللہ ہمارے جب دوسرا جو سیشن ہوا 10 ڈیز, اس پہ ہمارے جو علماء ہیں وہ کافی سلجھے ہوئے الفاظ اور کافی نرم رویہ رکھنے والے لوگ بنے. جب تیسرے پروگرام میں جب یہ لوگ آئے تو الحمدللہ کافی ان کے ذہنوں میں جو خدشات ہیں وہ دور ہو گئے اور غلط فہمیوں کا ازالہ.
In our first workshop we noticed quite a bit of resistance, quite a bit of hostility. In second workshop we found that hostility went down a little bit, and in third workshop there was actually an excitement to learning even more about new things and about West, in fact.
اور میں آپ سب بھائیوں اور بہنوں سے میں ریکویسٹ میں کروں گا کہ آپ گورنمنٹوں کے باتوں پہ آپ نہ جائیے, آپ وہ اسکالروں سے خود ملیے, آپ ان کے ساتھ جا کے خود ہی آپ ورک شاپ کیجیے, تو پانی کا پانی اور دودھ کا دودھ آپ کے سامنے ہوگا.
Okay, this is why it's so difficult to translate. I'm from Karachi, he's from Balochistan, there's a lot of cultural stuff going on in the translation as well. But dear brothers and sisters, what I like to appeal to you is to not strictly believe or just hear and understand the government's perspective from both sides. You really have to make an effort to go meet religious scholars, try to understand them, and find out for yourself how much room there is for tolerance and peace building.
ہم سب ایک اللہ کو ماننے والے ہیں, ہمارے اس پہ ایمان ہے کہ ہم جب اپنے آپ کو بہتر ایک اچھے انسان نہیں بنائیں گے تو دنیا کے سامنے نہ ہم اچھے ہوں گے نہ اللہ کے سامنے ہم اپنے آپ کو صحیح پیش کر سکیں گے.
We are all faithful people, believe in God, and we believe that I believe that unless I become a good person, I won't be able to make any positive changes. And so that is my appeal to all of you.
میرا آخری دو باتیں ہیں جی, ایک تو جہاد اور مدرسے کو آپ الگ الگ کیجیے.
One other appeal is you have to separate religious institution, madrasa and jihad in your minds.
اور جب تک آپ ان کو ایک کمبینڈ میں بند کریں گے تو شاید پیس پروسیس آگے نہ چل سکے.
یا ایز لانگ ایز وی کیپ کمبائننگ دا ریلیجیس انسٹیٹیوشنز اینڈ ٹیررزم اینڈ ایکسٹریمزم, وی آر گوئنگ ٹو ہیو اے ویری ڈیفیکلٹ ٹائم موونگ اہیڈ ود پیس پروسیس.
اور جس نے جو یہ نام دہشت گردی کا جو ایجاد کیا ہے اس پہ تو ہم جانا نہیں چاہتے ہیں, لیکن ہم پیس کے حوالے سے ہمارے تعاون اور ہمارا جو بھی کوشش ہوگی وہ انشاءاللہ آپ کے ساتھ ہوگی انشاءاللہ.
All we will put 100% and more effort behind it. If you are willing to work on peace, we are willing to work on peace, whatever it takes. But I think labeling certain names to madaris only creates reaction.
2 منٹ کے لیے شبیر بھائی ہمارے تھوڑے سے وہ پیش کریں گے ان کو, 2 منٹ کے لیے, صرف 2 منٹ کے لیے, صرف 2 منٹ. شبیر اللہ تعارف الکس.
Yeah, I'm Hafiz Khalil's brother and I'm working on a reconciliation, religious tolerance and interfaith dialogue through Madrasa reform. So far we have conducted a 10 days teacher training workshop 3, and we have trained so far 500 madrasas with the support of ICRD, and the next session where we are going to take a 1-day teacher training workshop in each madrasa where they going to teach them the same thing what we have taught them about the interfaith dialogue, religious tolerance and how to promote that. And I would like to add something. So far Soviet Union invasion, there were 30,000 students which went to the Afghanistan and for jihad. So after Soviet Union invasion, now they got free, and definitely when you are free you have to do a lot of things. So there were a lot of problems created for them and they didn't have anything to do. So in this regard they created a lot of problems. So I would like to thank ICRD in this regard, putting a lot of efforts to reform madrasa, and I'd like to thank the United States Institute of Peace and especially the Dr. Christine Fair, who just visited our institution and talked about how to reform it. So thank you very much indeed.
There are a few empty seats here in the front and on the right and left side. If those who are standing, please take a few minutes to come forward. If your jackets are holding up a space, not to sound like the Metro lady, but if you can remove your jackets so other people can sit there. And please take a minute to come on forward. We have a few seats here and a few seats. Yeah. Okay. Now we have Qazi Abdul Qadir Khamush, who is the president of Jamia Ulama Al-Hadith Group in Pakistan and also the chairman of the Muslim Christian Federation International, Interfaith Muslim Christian Group. Welcome him, and of course Azhar Hussain will translate also.
I'll try. Thank you so much, Kamrul Huda. Main اپوزیشن لیڈر کی حیثیت سے لاکھوں کے اجتماع سے بھی خطاب کرتا ہوں، لیکن مجھے اس سے زیادہ یہاں آپ سے گفتگو کر کے خوشی ہوگی کہ آپ ارباب حل و عقد ہیں، ارباب دانش ہیں، اور آپ دنیا کے لیے پالیسی بناتے ہیں، اس لیے آپ سے مخاطب ہو کر مجھے دلی خوشی ہوگی.
I speak to a large crowds, political crowds a lot of times, especially opposition crowds in Pakistan, but this is probably the most honorable and happy occasion for me to speak to scholars and policymakers who can actually understand where I'm coming from, and I think this is the very substantial work that we will undertake going forward.
میں چاہتا امن ہوں لیکن میں کچھ باتیں تلخ کروں گا تاکہ ہم امن تک پہنچ سکیں.
Okay. My goal is to reach all of us to reach towards peace, but in the middle of my talk I'm going to be very critical, but the goal is still the same, is to get to the peace. So if there are things that hits you hard, forgive him.
اس کے لیے میں آپ سے پیشگی معافی چاہوں گا. مسلمان کبھی بیت الحکمت میں بیٹھ کر جو ہارون الرشید نے ایک تھنک ٹینک تشکیل دیا تھا، پوری دنیا کے علوم اور فنون کو جمع کر کے انسانیت کے لیے ایک ایسٹ بنا رہے تھے. آج اس بیت الحکمت کا ایک چھوٹا سا وارث آپ کے سامنے اپنی جو جد و جہد ہے یا اپنے جو ادارے ہیں ان کے حوالے سے وضاحت کے لیے پیش ہوا ہوں ایک مجرم کے طور پر.
Who's going to translate that one? Muslims, originally Muslims started in Baghdad, created a compiled translation of great scholars of Christians and Muslims, an original think tank based in 11th century. Today, we are trying to do the similar thing. And in my capacity, I feel like I have to sit here and explain to you. Explain to you why we are not guilty.
تِلْكَ الْأَيَّامُ نُدَاوِلُهَا بَيْنَ النَّاسِ. یہ شب و روز کا ایک گردش ہے، کبھی کوئی کسی جگہ پہ ہوتا ہے، کوئی کبھی کسی جگہ پہ ہوتا ہے.
This is a cycle of time and the cycle of history.
اب میں انتہائی بریف بات کرنا چاہوں گا مدارس کے تناظر میں. مدارس کی تاریخ صدیوں پہ محیط ہے اور انہوں نے ہمیشہ محبت، امن، رواداری اور باہمی احترام کی جو اقدار ہیں ان کو طاقتور کرنے کی ہمیشہ تعلیم دی ہے.
مدارس have a long history and they have always taught love, peace, tolerance and coexistence with others.
وقت کی قلت کی وجہ سے میں مثالیں نہیں دوں گا، صرف ایک بات تفہیم کے لیے کہنا چاہوں گا بر صغیر کے حوالے سے کہ بیفور پارٹیشن کانگریس کے پلیٹ فارم سے بر صغیر کا سب سے بڑا عالم ابو الکلام آزاد اور نہرو اور گاندھی اکٹھے جد و جہد کرتے نظر آتے ہیں، اور ان کا دینی پس منظر اور ان کے ان اداروں سے وابستگی کبھی مشترکہ جد و جہد سے ان کی راہ میں رکاوٹ نہیں بنی تھی.
Before partition between India and Pakistan, that's what he's talking about, in 1947, you can see Gandhi, Nehru and Abdul Kalam.
Abul Kalam.
Abul Kalam. From, it was a religious leaders working together. And there was never as such conflict or intolerance between them.
Asal mein, mushkil kab paida hui hai? یہ بنیادی طور پر مدارس کے حوالے سے جتنے سوالات جنم لیتے ہیں، جتنے تحفظات موجود ہیں، جتنے اشکال ہیں، ان کا تعلق 9/11 سے نہیں ہے، بلکہ ان سب کا تعلق اس جدوجہد سے ہے جو بعض مذہبی قوتوں نے امریکہ کی قیادت میں افغانستان میں کی تھی.
Where did the problem start? It didn't start at 9/11, and it started with the struggle to rid of Soviets from Afghanistan and listening to United States.
اور اس وقت ان دینی مدارس سے اس جنگ کے لیے را مٹیریل مہیا کیا جاتا تھا.
At that time, raw material was created from Madaris to fight the Soviet invasion in Afghanistan.
اس لیے آپ کی نگاہ میں ان مدارس کا سارا انفراسٹرکچر ہے. اگر ہم کہیں بھی کہ یہ مدارس اب افغان وار کے دوران اور اس کے بعد ان میں کوئی کسی قسم کی کوتاہی نہیں، کوئی کمی نہیں، کوئی تشدد نہیں، تو یہ بات نہ ہم کھل کے کہہ سکتے ہیں نہ آپ اس میں بلیو کریں گے.
So now you have the whole structure in front of your eyes where you know what happened in Soviet invasion. And if I stand here and tell you that there are no weaknesses in madrasas, that would not be entirely true. Obviously, what was created is still operating to a large extent.
Asal masla us waqt paida hua hai ki jab Rusi army افغانستان سے چلی گئی ہے تو جو ادارے ہم نے یو ایس اے کے تعاون سے بنائے تھے، آپ نے ان سب کو، وہ ان نوجوانوں کو بھی، ان اداروں کو بھی بغیر کسی اور مثبت کام میں مصروف کیے ان کو آزاد چھوڑ دیا، اور اس وجہ سے وہ بے منزل ہو گئے، بے راہ ہو گئے، اور چھوٹے چھوٹے گروپوں نے اپنے طور پر، اپنے فہم کے مطابق، اپنے ویژن کے مطابق کاروائیاں شروع کر دی.
Right, when U.S. Russian military left, we also abandoned these mujahideens, fighters, who then, without having any other skills, created smaller groups, created little visions of their own, and because what they know is to fight best, that's what they are doing.
اور میں اس بات کی کسی صورت بھی تائید نہیں کر سکتا کہ تمام مدارس جو ہیں وہ بالکل ایبسلوٹلی رائٹ جا رہے ہیں، ان میں کوئی نیگیٹو ایکٹیویٹیز نہیں ہیں، بلکہ جو آپ نے بیج بویا تھا وہ بعض جگہ پہ سٹل موجود ہے، اور اس بیج کو ہم مشترکہ جد و جہد سے اس کی بہکونی کر سکتے ہیں.
Again, the seed that was sown at that time is still operating, still growing in some parts of Pakistan, and it requires mutual struggle to come up with a plan and come up with a process where we can fight this menace.
اور ایک چیز یہاں اپنے ذہن میں رکھیں کہ ان اداروں کے جو چند ایک افراد اب کاروائیاں کر رہے ہیں وہ کسی ایک سینٹر کمان کے انڈر نہیں ہے، وہ چھوٹے چھوٹے گروپ ہیں، اور ان گروپوں کے ان اقدامات کو آپ امت مسلمہ کے اجتماعی موقف سے تعبیر نہیں کر سکتے.
There are even within those institutions that promotes extremism, there are only very few people who are actively engaged in fighting and extremist activity. And you can't really call that an organization, because these are really disenfranchised groups. And also, even worse, if we can pile them as a Muslim extremism and cast all Muslims in one shadow.
ये ज़रूर बात है कि अमेरिका उसकी सियासी क़यादत उसके अस्करी फैसले उनकी वजह से उन ग्रुपों को हमारी सोसाइटी में एक हमदर्दी ज़रूर हासिल है और ये हमदर्दी उस वक्त तक बाकी रहेगी जब तक आपकी सियासी क़यादत के सियासी फैसलों में इंसाफ और तवाज़ुन नहीं आता
right. It's another thing that these small groups have an amazing amount of sympathy within our societies. These small groups or extremist groups that he's mentioning. And so that creates a kind of a larger society of sympathizers to these people. But what he's pointing out to is that that has a lot to do with our policies towards them. Aapne jo aakhri baat ki thi.
کہ جب تک امریکہ کی سیاسی قیادت کے سیاسی فیصلوں میں توازن اور انصاف نہیں آتا ان گروپ کی جو ہمدردی مل جاتی ہے مسلم کمیونٹی سے وہ ختم نہیں ہوگی
unless United States become more fair and just the larger Muslim populations will consistently align their sympathies with these groups because that's Those are the groups that looks like are fighting for justice.
میں اس کے ایک چھوٹی سی مثال دینا چاہوں گا مسلم ورلڈ میں جو سب سے ایک ٹالرنس سوسائٹی تھی جس میں برداشت میوچل ریسپیکٹ اپنی ایک ماڈل حیثیت میں تھا وہ عراق کا ملک تھا جہاں طارق عزیز کو اور طٰہٰ یاسین کو ایکول سٹیٹس حاصل تھا کسی مذہب کی بنیاد پر کلر کی بنیاد پر نسل کی بنیاد پر کوئی بات نہیں تھی لیکن صدام کے بعد وہ غلط فیصلے ہوں گے ہم بھی اس سے بہت سے معاملات میں اختلاف کرتے ہیں لیکن جس انداز سے امریکہ کی پولیٹیکل لیڈرشپ نے ایک مسلم ملک کو کیپچر کیا اس پہ قبضہ کیا اس سے پورے مسلم ورلڈ میں ان چھوٹے چھوٹے گروپوں کے لیے ایک ہمدردی پیدا ہو گئی ہے میری یہ خواہش ہے کہ آپ لوگ بہت مؤثر ہیں آپ کی آواز میں ایک وزن ہے آپ کی ایک ورتھ ہے آپ یہاں کی پولیٹیکل لیڈرشپ کو سیدھے راستے پہ لائیں جب تک وہ سیدھے راستے پہ نہیں آئیں گے ہم اتنی جدوجہد کر رہے ہیں آپ کر رہے ہیں یہ نتیجہ خیز نہیں ہوگی
مسٹر خاموش gives the example of Iraq where we kind of totally bashed things up he thinks where Taha Yassin, which is Tariq Aziz was Christians, were in political powers. There was quite a bit of tolerance and coexistence. A lot of literacy, a society that was vibrant, and we have messed it totally up. This whole society has become violent. And unless in his thing, unless you. You all, and I think he's talking about Americans, take some more responsibility to correct the paths of your political system. We can struggle, and we are in our countries, to create some balance and peace and tolerance, but it's very difficult to do that.
آخر میں ایک بات کہہ کے اپنی گفتگو ختم کروں گا کہ ان ساری مشکلات کے باوجود ان اداروں کی تطہیر کے لیے ان اداروں سے مثبت نتائج حاصل کرنے کے لیے ان اداروں سے جو کچھ منفی تھوڑی بہت سرگرمیاں ہیں ان سے نجات پانے کے لیے ہم کیا کر سکتے ہیں اس کے لیے ایک عام بات کی جاتی ہے کہ مدارس میں سائنس پڑھائی جائے میتھ پڑھائی جائے میں اپنے ایک ٹیچر بھی ہوں مدارس بھی چلاتا ہوں مدارس میں سائنس اور میتھ پڑھانے سے کوئی تبدیلی نہیں آئے گی مدارس میں آپ تبدیلی چاہتے ہیں تو وہاں صرف ضرورت ہے انٹر ریلیجس ہارمنی کی. یہ تو اختصاص کا دور ہے. پہلے ہم بیمار ہوتے تھے ڈاکٹر کے پاس جاتے تھے, اب بیمار ہوتے ہیں ہماری آنکھ میں درد ہے تو آئی اسپیشلسٹ کے پاس جاتے ہیں, دانت میں درد ہے تو ڈینٹسٹ کے پاس جاتے ہیں, ہارٹ میں پرابلم ہے تو ہارٹ والے کے پاس جاتے ہیں. تو ان مدارس کا تو ایک اسپیسیفک رول ہے دینی مبلغ تیار کرنے کے حوالے سے, دینی مدرس تیار کرنے کے حوالے سے, دینی ٹیچر تیار کرنے کے حوالے سے. ہمیں ان میں دوسری چیزوں کو لائیں گے تو نہ یہ اچھا ٹیچر بنے گا نہ اچھا سائنسٹسٹ بنے گا. صرف اس بات کی ضرورت ہے کہ ہم ان مدارس کے منہج میں, ان کے جو تعلیمی نصاب ہے, جو سلیبس ہے, اس میں ہم بین المذاہب رواداری لائیں, جو تمام مذاہب میں, وہ کرسچن ہو, وہ جیوز ہو, وہ مسلم ہو, جتنے آسمانی مذاہب ہیں ان کے بیسک پرنسپل ایک ہوتے ہیں, ایک ہیں. ہمیں ان بیسک پرنسپل کی طرف توجہ دینی چاہیے. یہ سائنس, یہ میتھ, ان چیزوں سے کوئی تبدیلی نہیں ہوگی.
Mr. Khamosh, I have no opinions. he has a few recommendations. He has very strong opinions about curriculum enhancement or reform that we talk about in West a lot. And he thinks teaching English and math and science is not going to reduce the level of tolerance. And it's not going to...
Level of hate.
And... in fact, these people might not become good religious leaders nor good scientists, and that's why everybody was laughing. But what is needed is, you can teach the contemporary topics, but what is more important is doubling the effort in integrating in curriculum tolerance and prejudice reduction, acceptance of other, and especially interfaith and interreligious understanding and coexistence. That is the only way that you're going to actually start to bring some level of extremists down.
I understand that ICRD has worked with different madaras, with different organizations, جو ایک تربیت کا سلسلہ شروع کیا ہے, یہ انتہائی مثبت نتیجہ خیز اور زمینی حقائق کے مطابق ہے.
He feels that what ICRD have started in Pakistan makes sense, it works well within Pakistani context, and it is it's getting pretty rapid results in creating some more tolerance.
لیکن میں اپنی گفتگو کو پھر اسی بات پہ ختم کروں گا کہ جب تک سیاسی قیادت کے سیاسی فیصلے درست نہیں ہوتے, اس وقت تک ہم جدوجہد تو کریں گے, یہ ہماری کمٹمنٹ ہے. ہماری ہم تو اپنی آخرت, اپنے جنت کے حصول کے لیے کر رہے ہیں, ہم اپنی جدوجہد نہیں روکیں گے. لیکن وہ نتیجہ خیز اسی وقت ہوگی جب آپ کے ہاں انصاف کی بالادستی ہوگی. جیسے آپ ایک امریکن کے تحفظ کے لیے سوچتے ہیں, اسی طرح ایک پاکستانی تحفظ کے لیے بھی سوچیں کہ آپ ایک الون سپر پاور ہیں, آپ کا وین بہت بڑا ہونا چاہیے, آپ کا ظرف بہت بڑا ہونا چاہیے. ہم آپ کو بطور سپر پاور کے قبول کرنے کے لیے تیار ہیں, آپ ہمیں بطور انسان کے قبول کرنے کے لیے تیار ہو جائیں.
What I like to say is that we will continue to struggle in this, but unless the political environment is ripe for progress within Pakistan and especially here, that until United States start to treat Pakistanis just as they treat American citizens as humans, we won't really see the needle move. And so this is his last appeal, is that our struggle is together, and he'll keep working on the peace thing no matter what happens, but the political environment has to be the right thing, and he's giving us a lot of homework to do, I think.
مثلاً آپ چاہتے ہیں کہ وہاں امن ہو, وہاں دہشت گرد غیر مؤثر ہوں, اور پھر آپ جنرل پرویز مشرف کو سپورٹ کرتے ہیں. جنرل پرویز مشرف کا وجود دہشت گردی کو فروغ دینے کا سبب بنتا ہے، دہشت گرد کو انکرج کرتا ہے. کیوں؟ کہ دہشت گرد یہ سوچتا ہے کہ اگر پرویز مشرف طاقت کے زور پر ایک منتخب حکومت کو ختم کر کے اقتدار پہ قبضہ کر سکتا ہے تو دہشت گرد کہتا ہے کہ میں اپنی قوت کو مجتمع کر کے سوسائٹی کو کیپچر کیوں نہیں کر سکتا. پرویز مشرف کا غیر آئینی وجود، غیر اخلاقی اقتدار دہشت گردی کے فروغ کا پاکستان میں سبب بن رہا ہے. یہاں آپ سے میری درد مندانہ اپیل ہے کہ آپ پرویز مشرف کے بارے میں اپنے نقطہ نظر کو تبدیل کریں. وہاں ایک ڈیموکریٹک، ریئل ڈیموکریٹک سسٹم لائے بغیر پاکستان سے دہشت گردی کو مینیمائز کرنا ناممکن ہے. تھینک یو ویری مچ.
Yeah, I think the last point is important to mention is his perspective is that as long as we keep supporting General Pervez Musharraf, who have taken power by force, it gives a model for other small groups that using force and using extremism within that society, they can get what they want. And that is exactly what happening. So indirectly, we are actually supporting the small extremist groups there by supporting the model that if your leader comes in with force, that you can exert your will by using force as well. Right, and that's why I'm skipping a lot of it because.
Right. I think that those points are really important and you'd be violent at this point by not translating them thoroughly.
Okay. What point you are talking about then, Christine?
Well, for example, if I understood him correctly, he was much more explicit about Musharraf's role in supporting these militants. And I think it's useful to actually
right.
translate what he said to a greater fidelity.
I don't.
Let me add.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
What I recollect is the Ghazi Saab was saying that the direct support of the President Musharraf is supporting terrorism. And in his opinion, the President also is encouraging terrorism because he thinks it secures his own position and secures his own policy vis-a-vis the United States. And this is against promoting peace and tolerance in Pakistan. If you want to adjust the problem of peace and tolerance in Pakistan, you must readjust your policies with the current president. He wants to continue a policy of terrorism and to also say he's fighting it, but he is the source of terrorism. That's what I picked up.
Well, he just told me that what I said was more according to what he wanted, which is a model that we support more than that President Musharraf directly supporting the terrorism.
میں یہ کہنا چاہتا ہوں کہ پرویز مشرف کا جو وجود ہے اس کا بطور صدر کے پاکستان میں ہونا جو ہے یہ دہشت گردوں کو تقویت کا سبب بنتا ہے. اس طرح کہ دہشت گرد یہ سمجھتا ہے کہ اگر پرویز مشرف بلٹ کے زور پر پاکستان کی ایک منتخب جمہوری آئینی حکومت کو ختم کر کے اقتدار پہ قبضہ کر سکتا ہے تو دہشت گرد یہ سوچتا ہے کہ میں اپنی طاقت کے بل بوتے پر سوسائٹی کو ہائی جیک کیوں نہیں کر سکتا. میں یہ کہنا چاہتا ہوں.
Yeah, basically he said the same thing. The wajood means the perception that Pervez Musharraf's government gives to the extremist groups. Is that by force? I basically said the same thing again, and yeah. I think he's reiterating the same thing. It's more of a model creation of if I can get what I want by force, by bullet, he uses it, then the smaller groups who tend to be very hateful and extremist try to do the same thing with a smaller the influence that they have.
Yeah, Khalid Hassan sahab baithe hain, wo inko behtar bata sakte
hain. No one can fault this panel for its timidity. You know, one data point that I forgot to mention earlier as to why the pedagogy is so important is because that these students, youngsters, as young as the age of 12 who memorized the Quran from cover to cover. they've memorized it in Arabic, and their first language is Urdu, and almost none of them really have a clue as to what it means. And so along comes the local militant who wants to recruit them to their cause, and they're very easy prey. They've got no ability to question or to challenge. And so this is one of the reasons that, you know, developing these critical thinking skills is so important. One last point that I would like to make is to compliment both of our madrasa leaders here on their great courage, because for the first 2 years when we were in partnership with the Institute of Policy Studies, there was we were for much of that time somewhat undercover, but these two gentlemen who are operating in the toughest parts of Pakistan both felt that, you know, they needed, in their partnership with us, they needed to be upfront about it and to tell everybody, put it in the media, because they felt that unless they could point to some of the good things the United States is doing, all their people have are these negative stereotypes to respond to, and that just foments more violence, and it's not good for anyone. And last but by no means least, I'd like to really compliment the tremendous courage of our project director on this, Ozzy Hussein, who's been translating for us here. But he's actually been working miracles in those workshops. He understands how to deal with the mindset. He's a great trainer, but he's also one of the most affable people you'll ever meet. And that combination has proven so effective. When he went off to that first 15-day workshop, I said, there's two things I want you to do. Wherever you can, I want you to hammer the human rights and the religious tolerance. And at one point, he baited the participants. He says, you know, I always grew up understanding that Islam was a religion of peace. He says, but as I look around the world, I'm hard-pressed to come to that conclusion. Well, this unleashed a torrent of quotations from the Quran from the participants about proving that Islam was a religion of peace. But by the time that discussion was over, those participants were asking to be trained in conflict resolution skills so that they could reach out in peace to the other sects, but also to other countries as well. So, you know, right beneath the tough, hardened exterior, there are human beings, just like all the rest of us. I think at this point I should turn it back to you, Kumar, but and to thank our panelists when we're done here.
With a few minutes left, we have microphones on the left and right. If you'd like to ask a question, please state your name and affiliation. So please just come to the microphone directly. And what we'll do, because we're short of time, is we'll take a set of questions, and then we'll have our panelists respond to those questions. So we'll start with this one, and come back to you.
I just want to thank all the panelists for their very valuable contributions. I have a couple of questions. It seems to me that in listening to the panel, there's a kind of heard Dr. Johnson say something really quite different from what the participant from what the guests from Pakistan were saying. Dr. Johnson mentioned that reforming madrasas is part of a larger effort to win the hearts of minds of people in the Middle East. And I was wondering if the other panelists perceive the reform of madrasas as part of a larger battle to win the hearts of minds. The other sort of distinction I would say, and I know that when there's dialogue, maybe it's not good to emphasize differences, is it seems to me that the edifying examples that Dr. Johnson mentioned as a result of the teacher workshops when people came up and thanked him point in a different understanding, I think, than we heard from the other panelists, which is that the sources of tension are not pedagogical and not the result of the curricula and the madrasas, but are political. So I wondered if our panelists could comment on that. And my third question is whether your experience in reforming madrasas would help in advising, for example, the governments of Pakistan, Iran, or perhaps Saudi Arabia, if they undertook reform of sectarian universities in this country. I mean, I'm referring, to use your term, Protestant sects, which have, you know, fundamentalist universities in this country where their biology curriculum, for example, their history curricula might use some examination in order to make them more tolerant. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll take a second for you so you can...
Let me just address the first one because then it'll go away.
Could you...
You misunderstood what I said, or let's say I didn't phrase it very carefully, but the madrasa reform is not a part of a larger goal of winning hearts and minds. What we are doing is trying to win hearts and minds for madrasa reform. Once we have a critical mass, then we, you know, then we can start initiating it. But this is the phase of madrasa reform we're in, not a larger goal beyond. Although that's not totally out of the question.
You wanted me to ask these same questions to them. अच्छा इन्हीं ये पूछ रहे हैं कि हम लोग इस phase को hearts and minds कहते हैं मतलब कि उन लोगों को ये समझाना मदरसे के लीडर्स को कि ये ज़रूरी है और हम ये चाह रहे हैं कि वो खुद ये कहें कि ये चीज़ ज़रूरी है टॉलरेंस लाना और करिकुलम को चेंज करना ये चीज़ ज़रूरी है तो इसके लिए ये क्वेश्चन था कि क्या ये आप लोग इस चीज़ से एग्री करते हैं कि ये फेज़ ज़रूरी है कि लोगों को पहले इनको तैयार किया जाए और वो खुद ये कहें ओनरशिप का मतलब ये खुद ये कहें कि अपने हमको ये चीज़ चाहिए
मैं समझता हूँ कि ये बड़ा रेलिवेंट क्वेश्चन है और मैं इसकी एक छोटी सी मिसाल देना चाहूंगा हमने जो सेकंड लास्ट वर्कशॉप की है गुजरात में उसमें मालाकंड एजेंसी में हाजी मोहम्मद अयूब साहब हैं जो 6 मदारस चलाते हैं आपने तो जब आखिरी हमारा सेशन हुआ अब ब्रीफ दे देना बाद में जब आखिरी हमारा सेशन हुआ जिसमें हमने पूछना चाहा कि आपने इस वर्कशॉप से क्या लर्न किया है क्या महसूस किया है तो उसने कहा हाजी अयूब साहब ने मालाकंड एजेंसी के रहने वाले हैं जो कि मैं जब आया था तो आपकी दोस्ती की वजह से आया था लेकिन अब जब मैं वापस जा रहा हूं तो मैं इस का एक मैसेंजर बन के जा रहा हूं कि हमें मदारस में अपना जो बैनल मजाहब मकालमा है बैनल मजाहब रवादारी है और दूसरे मजाहब का जो एहतराम है इसको बतौर एक सब्जेक्ट के पढ़ाना चाहिए तो ये एक छोटी सी मिसाल मैं आपके सामने रखना चाहता हूं जो इस वर्कशॉप का एक मुस्बत नतीजा है
ही थिंक्स अ वेरी रेलेवेंट क्वेश्चन गुड क्वेश्चन एंड ही गिव्स वन एग्जांपल ऑफ द वर्कशॉप दैट वी डिड 2 मंथ्स अगो मिस्टर खामोश इनवाइटेड अ लार्ज मदरसा madrasa leader who runs 6 large madrasas in northwest frontier in agency areas who came and said I came in because you invited me not because I want to be here and when he left he said I feel that we have a need to incorporate religious tolerance and peaceful subjects within our curriculum and I'm going to go back and ensure that we start to work on that process so that's what we mean by hearts and minds
سب سے پہلے میں معذرت کے ساتھ جو آج کا جو مقصد ہے ہم آئے مدارس پہ نہ کہ ہم یہاں سیاسی گفتگو کر رہے ہیں تو شاید یہ آپ لوگوں کو ایک عجیب سی بات لگے لیکن مدارس کے حوالے سے کیونکہ ہم آج کا جو مقصد ہے مدارس اور مساجد اور مذہبی رواداری کے حوالے سے ہم گفتگو کرنے آئے ہیں میں سمجھتا ہوں کہ کیونکہ میں خود ہی 8 سال سے فارغ التحصیل ہو چکا ہوں اپنے مدارس سے تو اس وقت ضرورت ہے کہ ہم اپنے جو مدارس میں سے جو تعلیم دی جا رہی ہے اگر اس میں کوئی رد و بدل ہو کوئی بڑا وہ نہیں ہوگا اس وقت دنیا کے سامنے دو چیلنجز ہیں اگر اس حوالے سے اگر ہم اپنے مدارس اور اپنے اس میں ترمیم کر لے تو میں سمجھتا ہوں کوئی اس میں بڑی بات نہیں ہوگی اور انشاءاللہ ہم اس پہ روا دوا ہے
آپ کو کیا خیال ہے کہ جو ہم لوگوں نے پروسیس شروع کیا ہے کہ لوگوں کو
وہ مثبت ہے وہ
تو مثبت ہے اور اس میں ہم آہستہ آہستہ قدم بقدم ہم لوگ بڑھ رہے ہیں انشاءاللہ اس میں کامیابی چیز کو بتا
دیجیے to answer your question, he thinks that is a positive thing to do, and we need to kind of take that process forward in order to get people to first really understand and want this type of change for themselves.
Thank you. Please.
Ganodata Foreign Policy Association. میں پہلے اردو میں بات کروں گا اسی کی ٹرانسلیشن میں آپ کو انگلش میں
شکریہ پھر میرے سے تو تھوڑا سا بڑھنا پڑ جائے گا
قاضی صاحب سے یہ سوال ہے کہ شیعہ اور سنی کی عراق میں ابھی بڑی بھاری پرابلم ہے اور پاکستان میں بھی وہ پرابلم ہے اس کا فوری حل کیا ہے دیر از اے بگ پرابلم آف شیعہ اینڈ سنی ان عراق ایز ویل ایز ان پاکستان واٹ از دا امیڈیٹ سولوشن آف دیٹ
بڑا اچھا محترم نے سوال کیا ہے کہ عراق میں جو شیعہ سنی ایک مشکل ہے اس کا حل کیا ہے میں سمجھتا ہوں آغاز میں تو یہ شیعہ سنی اختلاف نہیں تھا آغاز میں یہ تھا پرو امریکن رجیم اینڈ اینٹی امریکن تھاٹ بنیادی طور پر یہ تھا لیکن اس میں جب تلخیاں بڑی ہیں ایک دوسرے کی اموات ہوئی ہیں تو اب وہاں پر شیعہ سنی تصادم کی ایک شکل بھی نظر آتی ہے اس کا فوری حل کیا ہے یہ آپ بھی سمجھتے ہیں کہ ایسی چیزوں کا فوری حل دو اور دو چار کرنے سے ممکن نہیں ہوتا کہ بٹن دبائے تو لائٹ جل جائے بٹن دبائیں تو پنکھا چل پڑے اس قسم کی چیزوں کا اس قسم کا سلوشن ناممکن ہوتا ہے یہ جیسے سلو پوائزننگ ہوتی ہے اس کو میڈیسن بھی سلو ہی ملتی ہیں تو اس کا حل ہمارے جو بیٹوین شیعہ اینڈ سنی ہے وہ تو ہمارے دین کے اندر موجود ہے کہ بات اسمو بحبل اللہ جمیع کہ ہم ایک دوسرے کا احترام کریں اور اپنے شیعہ سنی میں پھر وہی بات کہتا ہوں کہ کوئی بنیادی جو عقائد ہیں ان پہ کوئی اختلاف نہیں وہ بھی ایک قرآن کو مانتے ہیں ایک رسول کو مانتے ہیں آخرت پہ بلیو کرتے ہیں اللہ پہ بلیو کرتے ہیں یہ بنیادی چیزیں ہیں جو شیعہ اور سنی کے درمیان کامن ہیں تو میں سمجھتا ہوں جب اتنی مشترکہ بنیادیں ہوں تو کوئی بات نہیں ہوتی کہ اگر ان کو مشترکہ طور پر شیعہ سنی کو ایک صف میں کھڑا کرنا ممکن ہوتا ہے لیکن جیسے میں نے پہلے کہا کہ یہ جو سیاسی فیصلے ہوتے ہیں یہ بہت سی مشکلات جنم لیتے ہیں تو وہاں پر بھی جو عراق کی اس وقت ڈومیسٹک سچویشن ہے آپ سمجھتے ہیں کہ اس میں سیاسی جو عمل دخل ہے وہ اس شیعہ سنی کی جو خلیج ہے اس کو بڑھانے میں کتنا کردار ادا کر رہا تو ہمیں سمجھداری کا ثبوت دینا چاہیے اپنے دین کی روح کی طرف لوٹنا چاہیے اور دین کی روح کی طرف لوٹیں گے تو یہ اختلافات مینیمائز ہو جائیں گے
In his opinion, there was no such conflict existed when we went into Iraq, and it was because at first that was a anti-American forces and pro-American forces. It was not anti-Shia or anti-Shia, anti-Sunni forces. And so eventually that kind of the violence kind of spawned into the sectarian realm. But I think the answer to that is within the Islamic theology, where there is no major differences between Shias and Sunnis. The basic fiqh, the basic philosophy is, and the basic rules are the same, where they believe in one God and one Prophet and one book, both of them. It is the political environment that fuels this type of tension.
Just add an encouraging note. In October, high-level Shia and Sunni from Iraq went to Mecca. And we came up with something called the Mecca Covenant that tries to get at all of this, and it was endorsed by Ayatollah Sistani. Unfortunately, they didn't ask the tough questions, so there were follow-on meetings. There was one in Oman, Jordan, and then lastly in Qatar. And in Qatar, they really did get down to the hard questions, and assignments were given. There will be accountability because they decided that this was real enough that they could form a permanent secretariat. So within Islam, within Iraqi leadership, they are trying to come at this in a very direct way.
Joseph.
Yeah. My name is Joe Monfield. I chair the board of the Center for World Religions, Diplomacy, and Conflict Resolution at George Mason University. I'm retired from the Foreign Service, Middle East veteran, and many years with Doug Johnson at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. At the risk of sounding like a shill for Doug Johnson and ICRD, I want to give my personal opinion that this project and this engagement, the Madrasa project, is one of the most enlightened and courageous activities, where you go right to the symbolic heart of what appears to many people in America as where the enemies are being generated, the jihadi phenomenon. And there is a tremendous amount of fear and propagandistic, and some rooted in just ignorance, that this project is has gone really gone to great lengths to prove is unfounded, and basically on the principle of respectful engagement with the humans on the other side. I can't describe how much respect I have, not only for this initiative, but for the participants. To think that you would sit in Washington with a Wahhabi representative and a Deobandi representative advocating greater tolerance, human rights, and actual democracy in a town that gives lip service to it, but constantly overlooks it in exchange for what's called robust, or sometimes called kick-ass foreign policy, is very, very illustrative, and I can't commend you enough for what you've done.
Thanks. I know there was not a... I know there was not a question.
Aapki hausla afzai se hum pehle se zyada iman aur commitment ke saath is kaam ko aage badhayenge. Encouragement.
Your encouragement gives us more fuel to go back and try doubly to create more peace. Let me, can I give one example of the recent workshop that we did in Karachi? There were madrasas that came from, that were just in the border town of Afghanistan and Pakistan. They are in Pakistan, Balochistan, but many of the students come from Afghanistan to study there. And when we were talking about the extremism and Al-Qaeda and all of that, you know, Talibans and all this stuff, one of the clerics got very, very angry. And he said, you keep talking about these organizations that we are totally against, but yet some of my students are still fighting the imperial forces and American forces. And he goes, but you have not asked me why are they fighting. You just put a blanket around it. Even though these people themselves are against Al-Qaeda and Taliban, but why are they fighting? And so that was an interesting thing. And I said, well, give us, you know, tell us what's going on. And he said, well, one of the students who are studying, studied 6 years in my madrasa, his house in a province of Nuristan got bombed. His mom got killed. Three of his siblings got killed. And two other houses were destroyed. Well, he was such a popular guy that not just him, but more than half of my madrasa went with him to fight Americans. And they used to make speeches against Taliban and Al-Qaeda. So it is a very complex situation. And the media and the way we are educated in the United States in sound bites, it waters down the human suffering, waters down the experience of people who are, I think, very intelligent, very devoted and committed to doing the right type of things. But I also feel that sometimes these people feel have no choice but to respond in kind. So I think that's just one example. And I can give you at least 30 more madrasa that have talked about similar things. They have no connections with any other organization, but yet... But there are elements within their madrasa that fight, and they can't stop it. The clerics from these madrasa teachers basically said, give me some strategies as to appeal to the people who are going into Afghanistan to fight. Tell me how I should stop them. Instead of telling me to teach tolerance and all that, just because right now this is what I'm thinking. How can I stop these people from going and fighting? So, you know, we are dealing with a very big monster, and I think people have genuine questions that only through engagement, only through us understanding what's going on there, and only through them understanding what's going on and why it's going on there, that I think can start to move the needle a little bit.
मैं इसमें एक second करना चाहूँगा आदर साहब की बात को کہ ان ورکشاپ کا فائدہ کیا ہو رہا ہے. اس کا سب سے بڑا فائدہ یہ ہو رہا ہے کہ ٹیچر اور ایڈمنسٹریٹر جو ہیں ان کا بیہیویئر چینج ہو رہا ہے. میں اس کی ایک مثال دیتا ہوں کہ جو ہماری لاسٹ ورکشاپ ہوئی ہے دو ہفتے پہلے اسلام آباد میں, وہاں میں نے لیکچر دیا اور اس کا جو رد عمل ہے اس کے ایک منٹ میں بریف دوں گا. میں نے کہا کہ جس طرح ایک مذہبی ریاست کی سب سے مقدس چیز ایک مذہبی ہولی بک ہوتی ہے, تو امریکہ ایک مذہبی ریاست نہیں ہے, ایک سیکولر ریاست ہے, اس کا جو فلیگ ہے وہ اتنا ہی محترم ہے. تو آپ جب کوئی بات ہوتی ہے سب سے پہلا یہ کام کرتے ہیں کہ امریکن فلیگ کو جلاتے ہیں, تو اس سے امریکہ کے ہاں ایک نفرت پیدا ہوتی ہے. آپ امریکہ سے ضرور اختلاف کریں لیکن اس کا جو طریقہ کار ہے اپنے نقطہ نظر کو کنوے کرنے کا وہ یہ اختیار کریں کہ آپ ہزاروں ای میل بھیجیں, آپ ہزاروں خطوط بھیجیں, جو پالیسی ساز ادارے ہیں ان سے رابطہ کریں, اراکین کانگریس سے رابطہ کریں, اراکین سینٹ سے رابطہ کریں. اس کا فائدہ ہوگا کہ آپ کی بات جو ہے وہ جینون جگہ پہ پہنچے گی اور اس کے مطابق آپ کی خواہش کے مطابق تبدیلی بھی آئے گی. آپ فلیگ جلائیں گے تو اس سے سوائے اس کے کہ ان کے مزاج میں بھی ان کی طبیعت میں بھی رد عمل ہوگا, وہ ہم سے طاقتور ہیں, ہم کمزور ہیں وہ طاقتور ہیں. کمزور اور طاقتور کو اپنے درمیان جو ڈیلنگ کا طریقہ ہے وہی اختیار کرنا چاہیے جو مناسب ہوتا ہے. تو اس میں جتنے ایڈمنسٹریٹر اور ٹیچر تھے سب نے اظہر صاحب سے کہا کہ ہمیں ای میل دیں, ہمیں ایڈریس دیں, کہ ہم یہی طریقہ اختیار کریں گے. یہ ایک جو بیہیویئر چینج ہو رہا ہے یہ ایک بہت بڑی سکسیس ہے ان ورک شاپ کی.
Let's give one more example of a success of a recent workshop, which is where Mr. Qazi was giving a presentation in this workshop, and amongst many points he also gave examples where he said more Christians are going out there, and more not just Christians but more Americans and more Europeans going out there and for rallies of peace, and they're taking their kids out, and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people show up sometimes in these rallies, and you have to start to think about those people too. He was talking to Madrasa and said that. He also said that when we get upset as Muslims by having somebody disrespect the Holy Quran, and we get really angry, you can just imagine the Americans might get just as much hurt and upset when you start to burn their flag in Pakistan in these rallies, with thousands of people shouting slogans and things like that. And you're actually isolating people who want to fight for peace, who already have quite a bit of feelings towards you as human beings, and you're actually hurting their feeling and putting distance from them. The way to do that is to write, maybe to send an email, to find what we were talking about is giving some other ways of expressing oneself. And you know, in Pakistan it's not very easy to write to your Congress congressperson or a senator to say, hey, I really disliked the burning of Quran in Guantanamo Bay, do something about it. And because of that, political process does not exist. Khamosh suggested that, but there are State Department websites, White House websites, go and write to them. And every single one of these clerics took the emails down and website numbers, and they said, I promise that from this point on, that's what we are going to do. So, I mean, that just goes to show that people, first of all, they just don't know how to express some of the grievances there. And the second is, if you give them some tools and some information, they're willing to use it. We know madrasa administrators who have gone out of Khalil's workshop and have taken upon themselves to now do speaking circuits, and they have done 28, 30 different, they have gone to madrasa and said, the way we are doing this is wrong, we really need to do this type of thing, and they have taken upon themselves their own time and spend money to do this work. So what Khamosh was saying is we can almost see and taste the behavioral change. It is almost that fast. But because of you have to remember, these institutions have been insulated and isolated. So once engaged, you get quite a bit of a result.
Thank you.
How fast.
I'd like to thank our panelists at this time, and thank you for everyone We're short of time. Thank you.